I believe that belief is the most important ingredient in our success. When we see it clearly and believe it dearly, we declare a defining moment, an epiphany, if you will. We declare, I can do this. I am doing this. Detailed success stories I know are the best way to build this belief. So I'm on a mission to interview every diamond and above in Young Living worldwide. I'm learning from them the granular details of what they thought then and what they think now. I gathered all their vital statistics on how many people they enrolled year one to the ER rate. Let's dive in and listen.
Hey everybody, Richard Blissbrook here with yet another Road to Diamond interview. And today we have the extraordinary opportunity of talking to another one of those superstars that come from that little tiny town way up in Alberta, Red Deer, which may have per capita produced more extraordinary leaders than any place on the planet, Chelsea Flamin. Chelsea, say hi to everybody.
Hey, thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. It's great to have you here. So, Chelsea, you know the routine. I'm going to just ask you some simple questions. Tell us some stories. People want to know, how does a girl from Red Deer become successful in Young Living? How many people live there, by the way?
I think it's 100,000 now.
Whoa, that's a lot bigger than I thought. That's a city. All right, I got to give Red Deer. I got to give Red Deer more props from now on. So, Chelsea, tell us to start off with. Just tell us, who were you and what were you doing and where were you before you ever heard of Young Living?
Yeah, sure. So, I was a school teacher, but I was also an entrepreneur. So, on the side, we had a little farmer's market business because we wanted more. We had student loan debt, and with two working jobs, it still wasn't quite enough. So I was 6 years into my teaching career, had three little ones. And in Canada, we get a year off every time you have a baby. So I would take a year off. I'd get a bit restless, go back to teaching, miss my kids, have another baby, take another year off. And that worked for a while until I started to really feel the pain of being away from my kids. I really could see them growing up. And as a teacher, I'm spending most of my time with other people's kids and then coming home with not a lot left to give my own. And so I really was kind of ready to find another way to be home, but to still be able to dream and live the lifestyle that we were living. And so I went to a little oils class at somebody's house. There was two of us there.
Wow.
The person presenting that day was none other than Mr. Adam Green. I think he was a silver at the time and had been for a couple of years. But I'm surprised
he didn't quit if only two people showed up to the class.
Right? Yeah. Yeah. And I think he was expecting more. But, you know, how that goes. Right. Last minute cancellations. And I know that I went there ready to build. And that's just what it was about for me. I thought, oh, I could use this product. I have little kids. And I remember saying to him, don't call me. I will call you if I'm interested. He said something about a rewards program. And I just kind of like, you know, said no, thank you. And went home and just started using the product. And like so many other people, just found myself telling people about it, loving the products, and shared by accident with a couple of people. But I can remember that switch flipping when I got that first paycheck. So it definitely started off about helping people. But as soon as I saw the results of just that little bit of accidental work I'd done, I knew that this could be the way, that this was going to be the way, and it was going to replace all the other things that made me so busy. You know, my plate was full, and this was going to help to free me up, and it did.
Okay, so a couple of specific questions. What was said to you that compelled you to go to that first class?
I don't think really anything, to be honest. Like, it was just one of those things where I had been researching it. I got an invite from somebody who'd invited me to other things before, and I just normally didn't go, but I saw what it was about, and I thought, oh, I was reading about this yesterday. I guess I'll go. So it was kind of just a coincidence, to be honest, that I ended up there.
All right, good. So second question, how much was that accidental paycheck that like turned all the lights on for you?
$272.
Well, you did some serious accidental sharing there.
Right? Yeah. When I believe in something, I promote it. So.
Right. All right. So how long was it, Chelsea, after you enrolled, before you decided, I'm going to build this? And so I guess that was the accidental sharing period. How long was that period of time? Because, you know, in many cases in Young Living, that's a year or two or three or four or 5 years before people understand there's an income opportunity. So how long did you bake as a consumer, an occasional sharing person?
It was only about 2 months.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And so then you got this check and you decided you were going to build it. What did you do, and perhaps who supported you and how did they support you? How did you figure out how to launch? Like, how did you create a strategy for, okay, this is how I'm going to advance through the ranks. This is how I'm going to build a team. Like, what kind of training did you get and where did you get that training?
Good question. I think part of it is that I didn't have a lot of training and I didn't really have a strategy, because I look back at this all the time. What did I do? What was I thinking? People ask me that. And I think the biggest thing was that I didn't overthink it. I just did it. I was excited and passionate and I knew it was happening. So it didn't really matter who wasn't joining me because I was doing it. So I would just talk to the next person, invite the next friend over. I remember in those first few months, sometimes having 18 moms in my living room with their babies and children, not a lot of listening happening, but people were just open and willing to come and hear about it. I was probably sharing 99% product, truly. Yeah. And it wasn't until, you know, maybe 6-7 months in that I made my first intentional business invite, and that took things up to a whole new level strategy-wise. But in the beginning, really, I don't think I had a lot of strategy. As far as training, I definitely had Adam casting the vision. And I think he's a master vision caster. I don't know that he gave me a ton of tips of how to do it. And he would say now he probably modeled lots of the wrong things, like being an expert. And he came and did a bunch for me until finally I was like, I think I could do this better than you. I'm a mom. I've got this. We laugh about it now. But, you know, he just had that belief. And I think he believed that I could do this. He believed he was doing it. And that was enough for me to believe it.
Okay. So one of the questions in your stats, let's see if I can find it here. How many PSKs did you personally enroll in year one? And you have an incredible statistic there, 78 personal PSKs in year one. That, in my opinion, is responsible for just about everything that happened since then, that kind of an intense launch. I'm curious, Chelsea, that many people, who did you approach and how did you approach people that got them to show up to your classes or wherever you invited them to come? So talk to us about the people that you approached. Were they close friends? Were they strangers? Were they social media people? And then what did you say to people that compelled them to come and look?
Mm-hmm. I think it was a mixture of the people really, really close to me, like that inner circle of friends. I skipped kind of the middle, the coworkers. I didn't touch that. It felt a little bit strange because I was teaching and trying to not teach anymore. So that's one area I stayed away from. But I think other than that, it was a lot of acquaintances, just people with kids was really my strategy. Other moms who weren't sleeping or, you know, whatever it was that had a need that I could fill. I used Facebook a lot. It's changed a lot since then for sure, but definitely I was sending personal invites along with a, you know, larger group message and just sharing the value of what I had found, probably from a really unfiltered place of excitement. Just, you know, not overthinking it, but this is what's working for me. You need to hear about this too.
That's good. I love that conviction and that unbridled enthusiasm. So can you give us a sense of what's the timeline on your rank? So how long did it take you to get to silver?
Yeah, so it was from the date of deciding to do the business, it was 7 months. Once the momentum was there, I think I really only had builders the month I hit silver, honestly. So I hit silver with a lot of customers and people that I had put people under, you know, and then I knew that I needed partners, business partners. So I approached a couple people that January, and 2 months later hit gold. So once the ball was rolling, the momentum picked up really quickly. After gold, I think it was just 6 months after that that we hit platinum, and then a year later to the month that we hit diamond.
Wow.
So 27 months total from decision to diamond.
And you have maintained diamond every month for the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's right.
That's pretty incredible. Congratulations on that. So what would you tell people, Chelsea, like if you were to write a book about how to be successful in Young Living, because most of the people that are listening to these calls they're asking themselves, okay, how can I do it? How can I not necessarily get to diamond? Like, how can I get to silver? Or if I'm a silver, how can I get to gold? Or if I'm a gold, how can I get to platinum? Just creating that momentum, either recreating it because we had it once, or creating it the very first time. What are some of the things that you would tell me if I was looking to do that are must-dos, must-bes? Like, who do I need to be and what do I need to do to create momentum?
Mm-hmm. I think the biggest thing I've already said a few times, just in how I came about it and how I approached it in the beginning, was that conviction. Be convicted and make a decision. Because then it doesn't matter what other people think or say, because you're doing this no matter what. And that'll come across in how you're sharing and in how you're showing up when you're talking to people. I think the other thing is to genuinely care about people. A lot of the people that I would have shared with in the beginning, even acquaintances, were people that I had a relationship with. It wasn't like I just out of the blue all of a sudden was recruiting them for this thing. I think that there was a level of trust. And I don't know if I knew that at the time, but a few of my builders later said that they knew me from the farmer's market business and they just wanted to know me better. And I mean, I was selling them something then too, but I was interested in their babies and we'd formed a relationship outside of that. And I did genuinely just want to help them. And I think that can really come across when it's not just all about building your empire, but really about helping other people. They trust you and they want to join you.
Yes. So let me drill down on a couple of those. First one is make a decision. So you made a decision, it sounds like, quickly and without a lot of coaching, based on what was going on in your family and finances and getting that $260 check. Can you talk about that decision-making process? Like, what were you thinking that led you to decide, I'm going to do this no matter what? I'm going to do it no matter if my best friend does it, if my next door neighbor does it. I'm going to do it no matter if people agree with me or not. Because I know you know this, Chelsea, that that kind of decision internalizes motivation so that we're motivated from our own convictions, where most people are actually motivated by their results. So their decision sounds more like, well, I'm going to try this, right? And so they try it, but most people say no. So if I'm just going to try it and I'm going to base my motivation on my results, then because most people are going to say no, well, most days I'm not going to be motivated. And so eventually I'm just going to quit. So can you speak to your own thought processes around what led you to be so convicted that you were going to do this no matter what?
Mm-hmm. From a personal perspective, I had been teaching long enough to know that I did not want to do that for the rest of my life. I think I was far enough in that I was a bit jaded about all the things I thought it was going to be. And yet I'm ambitious and a dreamer. Like, I needed somewhere to put that energy and still have something that I could grow and be successful at. And so to have something that I could control where there was no ceiling. If I worked harder, I could get paid more. The residual aspect of it was not something I was familiar with before, but the idea of working hard so that I could continue to get paid in the future was mind-blowing to me. And I think just those first few months of sharing with a couple people, they loved the product and they ordered again the second month. And I thought, well, that was easy. They love the, you know, the oils and the cleaner and whatever else. Like, they are committed to trying this. And I could see that it was a product people would order month after month, that it was something they were going to use up, it was consumable, and that it was something that applied to multiple demographics. So not just, you know, women at a certain age, but it could apply to people of all ages and genders. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So, you said a couple of things that I think might be valuable for people to hear more about. You said that you were ambitious and a dreamer. So I want to take each one of those separately. When you say you were ambitious, what do you mean by that? What did you have ambitions to do or be?
First and foremost, it was to be an amazing mom, honestly, and having these little people, like, as young as I can remember, I wanted a big family and I loved children. And so that was probably why I became a teacher too. But my influence was limited as a teacher. There was so much outside of the job description that I don't think I realized I was signing up for. And I was just missing more time with my kids than I wanted to. So first and foremost, I think just ambitious to do really well in my role as a mom and a wife. And I was not able to do that with the career I was on. I think too, just always as a kid looking for ways to grow and learn. And even just how we had that side business on the go. And every time I would take time off work, I'd get bored. It's like I needed something, a creative outlet to pour into that could have an impact on people. And this has done that. This has been an amazing opportunity to inspire other people to dream and to also join us and be able to experience the same thing we have. And most careers, you don't get to bring people along with you in that success. It's your success and they're watching you. With this, right, we're able to bring other people on board and experience it too.
And how important is it, do you think, that people are, you said, curious and wanted to learn new things and grow? Like, if we were to design the perfect young living leader, how important is learning and curiosity and being willing to grow and having that ambition about wanting to be the best you can be? How important is that?
I think it's hugely important. At not learning maybe in the sense of knowing everything and feeling like you can't do it until you know everything, because I've seen that stop a lot of people in their tracks. But I think curious and willing to learn and do things differently, because it is going to look strange to the people around you. You're going to have a lot of people not understanding or calling it down. And so having that curiosity to, you know, look at it a different way and be willing to do things differently is super, super important, I think, because it's not traditional.
Yeah. It's almost like the same person would be curious enough to look at the product line. I mean, that same trait versus the person who says, no, 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 I know all about that. I know all about everything I need to know about health and healing and parenting and, you know, healthcare and nutrition, right? The arrogance of people blocks them from both inquiring about the product, inquiring about the income model, and then also being coachable.
That's
because
right.
If you've never done this before, well, how would you know what to do or how to do it? And hardly anybody's ever done this before that's endeavoring to do it. So that's another way of saying all that, perhaps, is that you're coachable. So you also said you were a dreamer. What are some of the things that you dreamt about that have come true?
Huh. That's a good question. Homeschooling would be one. Just being able to pour into my own children, that's become a huge passion of mine. We live on an acreage where our boys, we have one girl, but our boys, all four of them, can roam free and have that space. That's always been something I've dreamed of. Being able to give generously and not have to worry about covering the bills. Traveling with our children and letting them see the world firsthand and learn about it hands-on. And
where have you taken them?
They've been mostly around North America. Our fourth baby came with us to Croatia on one of the diamond trips. So that he was, you know, a world traveler at 4 months old.
Right.
France as well, and all kinds of cruises, and just really neat opportunities that they would not have otherwise. My husband had not actually traveled outside of North America in his life before this opportunity. So
beautiful. And what are some of the dreams that you have still unfulfilled? Like, what do you think about for the future? I know you and I have talked about this some, and I think there's a lot of people that think about this. They think about when is enough enough, and should I continue to be ambitious when maybe I have everything I really ever wanted that matters? Mm-hmm. What's next for you?
That's a good question. We're in a season of really weighing that and deciding that. We've got all kinds of dreams kind of on the table because we're dreamers. Not all of them are maybe realistic or even things we want to pursue. But I mean, even making the incredible income we make, we still have house debt and mortgage debt, and we still have to decide, you know, where it's going. And so that for sure would be amazing, to be living debt free and, you know, lifted from that weight. And I don't know, we're always exploring what is it that Jamie's passionate about. He's joined me in this at home, but it was my thing, you know, it's still my thing. And so he's an incredible support and has used his gifts to help me. But yeah, just dreaming about what it is that will, you know, excite him and give him somewhere to, you know, succeed and win at.
Yeah, it's such a dynamic, powerful income model. You know, it's kind of like, you know, a toy that we play with, and we have no idea in the beginning how powerful it is. And then all of a sudden, you know, a school teacher from Red Deer, Alberta is, you know, making $25,000, $30,000, $40,000 a month. And then, of course, And this is such a typical story, right, in Young Living, that boom, all of a sudden we have this income. Yes, we wanted it. We dreamt about it. We pursued it. We worked hard for it. But did we really, really expect we'd be making that kind of money every month and month in and month out? And so, you know, you start to like exercise a different way of living. And then if you have a husband, a spouse that is grinding away at a job where they're bringing in $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, whatever a month, you know, what's happened in Young Living is so many husbands have come home. And yet that always hasn't been the best solution, right? Because what does he do? And what does he do to continue to have, you know, his engagement and his passion and his contribution where money doesn't matter? And it really like throws a whole paradigm shift in the family, because historically for the man, well, I matter because of money, right? My job matters because of money. I get up early, I go out, I do whatever I do because I'm taking care of the family. And then all of a sudden, somehow my wife becomes a multi-millionaire virtually overnight. What? Like, what do I do with that? So I know you and Jamie have explored that. Do you have any wisdom to share with people that may end up in that position or already are?
Mm-hmm. I think we're really honest with people about the dynamic, because I don't want people to have their dream be to retire their husband. I think that's actually really a terrible way to put it, because so much of a man's identity is wrapped up in providing for his family, and it can make for a really ugly dynamic if you just become his new boss and he's your assistant. That's not fulfilling.
It's not healthy
for you. Like, it can be really ugly. And so we've been honest about that. A lot of our team members will compare, you know, they want their husbands to do what Jamie does. And so we'll just share, figure out what his gifts are and don't pigeonhole him into something. Jamie's really good at graphics and, you know, technology stuff. So that's where he plugs in. He doesn't love to speak or teach, and so that's not where he plugs in, you know. So figuring out where they can support you is great. But even the Mr. Mom role, he loves our children, but when he's with them all day, he's done. Like, he's just not fulfilled with that in the same way I am. And so recently we have a nanny that helps us with some of those pieces so that he can pursue hobbies and interests, and he doesn't have to be Mr. Mom just so that I can have work hours. So figure out what's going to work for your dynamics and give space. Give them space to figure that out for themselves too, because your marriage is worth it.
Yeah. Nothing's more important than your health and your family. Because, you know, let's face it, almost everybody that's in Young Living was doing just fine before they got in Young Living. Maybe their lifestyle was different around money. Okay, I have to work. I have to pay attention. I have to pay the bills. I got debt. And now maybe it's different, but it's not like people are homeless, right, and starving, right? Everybody's doing pretty good. And so all of a sudden, great financial abundance. Well, that's pretty cool. But nothing's cooler than health and family.
Mm-hmm.
So, Chelsea, how about, can you speak to personal development a little bit? Can you talk to people about maybe some of the challenges that you faced building a team, leading a team, and some of the things that you've done that have helped your leadership development?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be real vulnerable here and say that this is the piece that caught up to me, because I wasn't really thinking about what I was doing. I was just doing it. I had a goal in mind and a real finish line in mind. We achieved that, you know, I'm home and we're doing well financially. And somewhere along the way, I think I kind of stopped and realized that I was in over my head. Like, okay, I can share with people, I can enroll new people, but then add on top of that the leadership stuff and then figuring out how to motivate other people to do it and coach them, or coach people that don't want to be coached, and pretty, and I'm not great at saying no. So, you know, setting boundaries and not just doing whatever everybody else thinks I should be doing. I got burnt out and a little bit overwhelmed. And that comes down to personal development, really learning those leadership skills to unplug, learning to set business hours and deciding how much, you know, you're willing to put in. I think for a season you can do, you know, superhuman things, but after a certain point, there needs to be that balance. Otherwise, you'll just burn out. So personal development is learning those habits, I think.
You said something I think really profound there that would serve people to think about, that the pace of play that's required to create momentum, maybe perhaps go from rank to rank to rank, that pace of play is very difficult to sustain as a marathon, long term, long distance. You know, some people sustain a pace like that for 4 or 5 years, but boy, that really tests them, tests their family to sustain that level of pace for 4 or 5 years. And perhaps a better strategy is run hard for 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 months and coast and reconnect and reset and rest and do some personal development and grow as a leader and then re-engage for 4 or 5 or 6 months and then rest for a few months or 1 year on, 1 year off, right? Why not? And as long as you're candid with your team, as long as you tell your team, hey, this is what I'm doing, because one of the things that you're speaking to there, Chelsea, is if you're doing everything for everyone, well, you're the leader, but you're the only leader. Mm-hmm. And ideally, what we want to build here is how beautiful would it be to have 6 frontline people that were way better than you? They were more ambitious. They were better coaches. They were better speakers. They were better leaders. They had a better work ethic. They were more motivated. They had more time, right? Just let them go. Right. And so that's where we get total freedom. Freedom isn't just from the income. Freedom comes from not having to be the one that does everything. And so there's leadership development for us, and then there's leadership development around our team so that we're not the only leader. What things specifically have you done that has catapulted your leadership development? Things you've read, things you've studied, courses you've gone to, any specific recommendations for people?
Mm-hmm. I think in general, coaching in any form is valuable because you can't see your own blind spots. So a good coach of any kind is really important if you want to be a coach. Recently, I went to your Bliss Life Workshop, yeah. And one of the things for me that really shifted my way of thinking that I've been pondering and thinking on since is this idea that retirement is possible, that this can be a season thing. It can be something that you build so that one day you don't need to work. I think some people thrive off of, you know, having something to sink their teeth into, and they will work at it forever. And then there's others, maybe because of the season and motherhood or whatever, who want to work hard so they don't have to work hard and enjoy the fruits of that hard labor. And so for me, I think that was a powerful shift, not only for me, but I think more for what I'm sharing with other people, the picture I'm painting for other people, that there really is true freedom in it. If the goal is to set yourself up so that you can experience life truly on your terms, I feel more integral sharing that with people, knowing that they too can have, you know, that time freedom, not just the flexibility, but the true freedom.
Well, you want to be careful with that, I think, Chelsea, because if you actually did retire and you actually were in integrity with the opportunity. The opportunity is always presented, hey, build it once, get paid forever, build it, and we're totally free, do whatever we want. But if you actually do retire and you start telling people that story, you might find that you recruit more people than you did.
Right.
Now what are you going to do? You just delegate them, right? Just put them down, put them in other legs. But yeah, why not? Why not do what the opportunity offered us all the opportunity to do? And for some people like me personally, I just love to work and I don't love to retire. But some people love to retire. And so, my gosh, this is the most extraordinary opportunity on the planet to build something once and get paid forever. And we all picked the right company. Some of us picked it sooner than others, but we all picked the right company to build it once and get paid forever. So, my gosh, if that's what we want, there shouldn't be any should that tells us we shouldn't do that. We should do whatever we want to do, and especially if we can. And we can all do that here. I'm curious, you mentioned that you, I don't know if how you'll answer this, but I'm curious anyway. You said earlier that when you started presencing the income opportunity in addition to products, things rapidly increased. Can you speak to that a little bit?
Mm-hmm. That same month, I approached two different people and straight up just said, hey, I don't even know exactly what I said. Hey, would you ever consider doing this as a thing? Like, would you ever consider giving this a shot? I think I said, give it a 6-month shot. And they both said, yeah. And they already were kind of doing it, but there hadn't been that moment of decision. I think it gave me permission to lead them. And I knew where to focus in a way that I didn't before when I had all these members. I think I had 337 members that first year, but I didn't know who I was running with. I think I was trying to make it be the thing for some people who didn't want it to be their thing. And this just helped me to classify and figure out who wanted it and who to run with.
Smart. And you saw significant growth from that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like the momentum was incredible.
Right. All right. Cool. Boy, we've covered a lot of ground. You have a lot of wisdom, lady. I'm inspired. I wonder if your team appreciates how much wisdom that you've gathered in the last 7 or 8 years to coach them to do what you've done, if that's what they want to do. So hats off to you and Jamie. I'm going to turn the tables on you like I do occasionally with people. And you don't have any prep on this, so we get to see how fast you think on your feet. As we wrap this up, do you have a question for me that might serve ambitious young living, not quite diamonds yet?
I have a lot. I think my question would be, how do you stay clear on what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it as the plates get fuller, as the leadership and all of the roles that come with it get into the picture? How do you stay clear on why you're doing it and what you're after?
That's a great question. And simple answer is keep the question alive. So what people tend to do is they launch based on, okay, I'm going to do this because. So they have a story, which is basically a vision. I'm going to do this because it will lead to this. This is important. I don't want to teach anymore. I want to have a bigger family. Right? So I'm going to do it because. And then they get into the doing it. And of course, if you think about it, when we launch building our team, the world of young living to us is really pretty small compared to a year or two down the road where we have 300 or 500 or 1,000 people on our team. Now our Young Living world is much bigger and it's more complicated and there's more distractions and there's more opportunities and there's more drama and there's more trauma and problems, right? And so things are different than the day we started. And so the motivation changes, which is why, you know, sometimes people might call it burnout. Okay, you know, I tried this, I ran real hard for a year and I kind of lost my mojo and I don't have the same fire I had when I first started. And I think the sad part about that is most people speak about that as though it's an indictment, like the fire is something that visits us if we have good fortune. And they don't understand that they can actually create that fire themselves anytime, anywhere. And the fire you had in the very beginning, that wasn't accidentally. You actually created a conversation. And the conversation, and maybe in your case, Chelsea, sounded like, I don't want to teach anymore. I want to have freedom. I want to be able to actually be free to engage and lead and educate my family. And I'm willing to work really hard for 4 or 5 years to have that freedom. That's a conversation you created. And you got some coaching from Adam and other people about, hey, have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? But you create the conversation. It's that conversation that launches you into massive action and the kind of massive action that blows right through naysayers and people that put it down and people that don't join you, right? You just blow right through them. So how do you keep that same fire 6 months into the game or 6 years into the game? You understand what creates the fire, and what creates the fire is an intentional conversation that is embedded from your core values. What is important to you? And so if I was talking to you, you know, a year or 2 years in, where you thought, okay, I'm not sure, how do I stay focused? How do I keep the fire? I would simply ask you something like, Chelsea, why did you decide to do this to begin with? Tell me about that defining moment decision where you went from sharing accidentally to, boom, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do this no matter what. Tell me about that decision. Tell me about that vision. Tell me about that ambition, that dream. Tell me what you were running towards and tell me what you were running away from. And then I would just ask you, okay, now, okay, maybe it's more complicated. Maybe it's more overwhelming, but what's the truth now? Is the truth now still that you want that dream? You want to manifest that ambition? You want that freedom for your family? Or has it changed? And, you know, the cool thing about us as humans is we can do whatever we want. There shouldn't be any shoulds. You know, if you're 6 months into this and you're feeling burned out and tired and you think, and you know, maybe you like read one of those books or listened to one of those podcasts, which, you know, quitters never win and winners never quit. And, you know, you shouldn't quit and, you know, blah, 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 blah. Okay, great. So you don't quit, but that doesn't put you on fire, to read a cliche that winners never quit and quitters never win. That doesn't put you on fire. That might just guilt you into not quitting. So what do you do? Well, you still sort of show up. You know, we see those people at the meetings, you know, they haven't quit, but they resigned 6 months ago, right? Because it's not a matter of quitting or not quitting. It's a matter of, are you in massive action building your dream? If you're not, well, you quit. And that's okay. It's absolutely okay. Why should you do this? There shouldn't be any shoulds. There should only be, what do you want? And, you know, sometimes the most powerful thing you can do is not do something for 3 or 4 months. And all of a sudden you get the clarity, oh my gosh, I really miss all that chaos and all that overwhelm and all those people. And I miss it. okay, go do it again. And then maybe you go do it again for 3 or 4 months and you start whining. And so if I was talking to you, I'd say, well, quit. Right? We talked about it at A Bliss Life, right? There's either succeed, struggle, or quit. We only have 3 choices. And most people choose to struggle. And I would coach people, hey, either do it or quit. Because nothing's permanent. You don't have to do it forever just because you say you're going to do it forever. And you don't have to quit forever just because you quit. So that's the long answer. The short answer, Chelsea, is keep the question alive and answer the question with authenticity, with the truth, not with a should. Mm-hmm. That's the best way to keep the fire burning. And you want to also, you know, be on the lookout for sabotaging rationale. Like, well, I'm not as excited as I was because, you know, it was easier on social media 5 years ago, or now there's more people in town that are in the business, right? That's not authentic truth. That's whining. And you know, do you want to be really suspect of that kind of stuff? But if you just told me, hey, you know what? It's more important to me to be home with my kids than it is doing classes every night of the week and running all over the place. I get it. Or if you say to me, it's more important to me to sacrifice some, not all, but some of what I could give my family for the next 5 years so that I can be present for them for the next 50. I get that too. Mm-hmm. Come from the truth and stand in the question. And then I think you'll always be headed towards true north, your own true north. Keep you grounded.
Thank you.
Thank you, Chelsea. What an awesome story. Thank you for sharing it today. I know you got your hands full with the business and the kids. And so carving out some time for me and Road to Diamond and all the people around the world, because literally people will be listening to your story, Chelsea, around the world, not just today or next week, but people are going to hear your story a year from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And you sharing all of it is a huge contribution, and I know is going to impact somebody who's going to go on their own diamond journey, and they're going to give you at least partial credit for inspiring them. So thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure. Thanks so much.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for joining us for another Road to Diamond. We'll see you at the next interview. Remember, the work is worth it.
Thanks for listening. I trust you got some golden nuggets. If you're inspired sufficiently, I invite you to join me for Run Through Rank. Run Through Rank is a coaching program designed to have you blow through your next rank with never having to worry about requalifying. We come together twice a week for an hour for 60 days. You'll end up with 16 to 20 hours of custom video content you can study forever. This could be the best investment you ever make. Check it out at runthroughrank.com. That's runthruRank.com. We'll see you there.